Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Caroline.
And I'm Anna.
And this is Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman. This week we're joined by our colleague, New Statesman sub-editor Yo Zushi, who is going to talk to us a bit about Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is someone that he takes very seriously, but is not someone that necessarily everyone else has. Yo, you've written a really great essay about Arnie. Just give us a sense of what you said in that.
Well, the gist of it is, although it's very easy for people who consider themselves progressive and of the left to dismiss someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was a Republican governor of California, palled around with George Bush Sr. and a little bit Jr. too, and says glowing things about Nixon, that doesn't mean, you know, his own political allegiances doesn't mean that we as progressives, lefties, have to discredit him and his achievements. My article was essentially about the idea that we can admit the impressiveness of people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, regardless of his theme.
And you also, you reference the fact that his whole career is just a kind of a manifesto for hard work, right?
Hard work, hard work. You go online looking for t-shirts with Arnold Schwarzenegger's face on it, as I have done in the past, and you'll find that a lot of those pictures, actually it's very rarely of Arnie's face, it's usually of his supremely ripped body. Those pictures would be accompanied by slogans from his career or his movies, like do it now, which is one of the very transferable quips which you can use in any context. But you know, he is associated in the minds of a lot of people with this super motivationalism, if that's a word. He gives talks about motivation, and those who have come in contact with him, like, for example, a bodybuilder I spoke to in the course of doing the research for the next bodybuilder, actually, during my research for the article, felt that his life was changed, you know, by the focus displayed by Arnold Schwarzenegger giving a talk standing in front of him.
And you said in the piece something that I thought was really interesting, which was the idea that he kind of embodied the dominant ideals of his time.
There's a lot of talk about how the age of popular culture is kind of winding down, in the sense that we understood it over the past century. I don't remember who it was who said this, but I remember reading somewhere that popular culture has been replaced by a plethora of subcultures. You know, no one dominates the popular imagination in the same monolithic way that the stars of the pre-internet age did. You know, if you think about movie stars today, who has that towering, almost Greek god-esque stature, mm-hmm. which Arnold Schwarzenegger had, his predecessors, Humphrey Bogart, you know,
Errol Flynn,
and also female actresses mm-hmm. as well. You know, like, you know, in my mind, Kim Basinger is still a mega star mm-hmm. in a way that, I don't know, like, okay, someone who was on the cusp of that transition, Liv Tyler never quite became, mm-hmm. you know, it's that idea, which I was trying to touch upon, the idea that Arnold Schwarzenegger is a real kind of encapsulation of the attitudes of 1980s America. Mm. That's shown in quite a direct way in propagandistic movies, wherein he plays like a US, ex-US commando brought back in to kind of kill some kidnappers. But if you look at Red Heat, for example, which came out a year after the fall of the Soviet Empire, it was all about reconciliation with Russia. He plays a Russian agent, and one of the Belushis, I think it's John Belushi, no, James Belushi, the less funny but better actor one. he plays a grizzled American cop, and it's a culture clash movie about cultural reconciliation. And I don't think it's, you know, reading too much into it that the demand for that kind of product reflected the wider kind of mentality of the American people at large.
I thought it was fascinating as well what you said about him kind of embodying the American dream, and that he should go on to play such kind of American characters.
Well, being an Austrian.
Being an Austrian, and not even through his kind of bodybuilding Mr. Universe stuff. He didn't even really come at America in the kind of classic way, did he? You know, he didn't just sort of like move to LA and hope for the best. You know, he worked incredibly hard, became famous in one arena before he translated.
I think he was a pragmatist, though, because here was a man who admits he's not particularly a good actor. He admits that he's not particularly funny. He admits he
not intentionally, anyway.
Well, not intentionally. I find him hilarious. But he didn't have many options. He wasn't like an Albert Einstein figure who could, you know, become an international figure using his brains and brains alone. I think he's a very intelligent guy, but he did it through, you know, if you think about what a perfect thing someone with focus and drive bodybuilding really is, you know, all you do is go in, and he has this slogan, which is reps, 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 which is to repeat, repeat, repeat. And he transferred that attitude where, you know, in his youth, it would allow him to do way more training than anybody else, becoming, as a teenager, the most hotly tipped and you know, widely considered the greatest bodybuilder of his era, through just like doing weights again and again and again when everyone else would have stopped. To later on in his life, he would do the exact same thing with speeches he'd have to make as the governor of California. And in his autobiography, the 2012 one called Total Recall, he makes that direct comparison between his mentality as a bodybuilder, where he would do reps, 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 to his public persona, his job as a politician, where he'd perfect speeches and get a very good reception from them through doing the kind of reps, 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 which other politicians probably don't do or can't do.
And I guess reps, reps, reps is a philosophy he's applied in reprising his role
as a Terminator.
Exactly.
But and it's a good film, and I don't begrudge him for repping that. Yeah.
So there's a new one just out, and you've seen it. What did you make of it?
Terminator Genisys is, though not actually the third Terminator movie in the franchise, is considered the third by people who enjoyed the first and second movies. And in fact, James Cameron, who directed, I think both of the first two movies actually, has been going around saying it's the third one, which I feel sorry for the people who made Terminator 3, which was shit.
So he's just erasing it from existence.
Yeah, he's erasing it, much like the film's narrative does of erasing timelines.
Actually, we should say at this point, we had a comment from a listener disputing my suggestion in our Harry Potter special that I couldn't just declare things J.K. Rowling has written after she finished the Harry Potter series as not canonical because I don't like them. And now I feel, which I claim I can do and have done, I'm pleased to see that James Cameron is doing that too.
The same thing.
It's good enough for James Cameron, it's good enough for Caroline.
It's more than good enough for me.
But what would, you know, what do you think Christian Bale thinks? You know, his very hard work on Salvation has been erased. Just to talk about the film, just for its own sake, it couldn't go wrong really, because the bar was so low with 3 and Salvation, and the series too, which wasn't very good, although a lot of people love it and are quite evangelical about the series, that it just felt okay. You know, it's a film which piggybacks on former glories. There's very little character development, and our engagement as the audience to the characters is very much dependent on our foreknowledge, right, of their experiences and what they should be doing if the time, you know, I'm not sure if it's a spoiler, but it's a movie where the timeline of the original first two movies have been completely revised in order to allow for a new villain. Mm. Yeah.
So, okay, so it's not really an entry point for someone new to Terminator.
It would be incomprehensible, yeah. which perplexes me really, because the point of rebooting a franchise is to attract a new audience. But who you know, unless they've already seen one or two, which I suspect everybody in the world probably has, if you're interested in action movies.
Well, I wonder though whether because something else you referenced in your piece is remembering watching Terminator 2 as a 10-year-old and finding it really, really dull until all the violence kicked in.
Which is actually quite sharpish.
Yeah.
But no, what it's just, I didn't find it so dull so much as I was exhausted, because the context of that was we'd been playing baseball with some American people all day. And
so you were just really tired.
We were very tired. Mm. And
but the violence woke you right up again.
It sure did, yeah. And I'm a peaceful man. I don't believe in hitting things or people, but you know.
But I wonder whether is the kind of violence and the action in Terminator Genisys as exciting?
I think violence in its own sake is very rarely exciting. It's how it's framed and how it's shown, and you know, I don't want people listening to this to think that I'm some bloodlust.
No one could think that. Yeah.
but basically, I'm quite a fan of screen violence. from you know, very depraved horror movies, often involving ballerinas getting decapitated and being chased by possibly supernatural beings with knives. I enjoy that, and as a fan of that kind of movie, I find Arnold Schwarzenegger's aesthetic, and I know he didn't direct these movies, but people who make films designed to be Arnold vehicles seem to kind of channel an older kind of vernacular when it comes to action cinema. And there's something quite, you know, nostalgia-inducing about Terminator Genisys's action sequences, which I suppose people of my generation and older, I'm 33, will kind of feel very much at home watching. And
that's really interesting, because I feel like in my limited knowledge of what Hollywood is up to, the kind of action genre, particularly comic book films and that kind of stuff, all the attention is expanding into big markets like China, where people don't necessarily have the kind of back knowledge of the kind of back catalogue. I'm thinking particularly of, I've only seen half of one Transformers film, but it was totally incomprehensible to me as to what was happening.
I felt that the same thing.
But I really, and I've the friend who I was watching it with, who had seen all of them and all of that movie, and was like, you don't understand this any more than I do, in the sense that it's, even if you have seen all of it, but what you're supposed to enjoy is just the vision of robots punching airplanes out of the sky. Well, and I wonder whether there's something to that about the modern reboot.
Well, that was the intention of cinema from its very origins. You know, the first cinematic spectaculars were really just spectacles. Mm. You know, they were created not... No, the first films weren't really created by narrative... artists, novelists, auteurism didn't even come in at the concept till, you know, Cahiers de Cinema started to bandy it around. It was a product of the sideshow of a circus, a magician's kind of trade.
Like Méliès and stuff,
And, I think cinema, even modern cinema, still carries with it that vestige of spectacle status. And even when people watch films which are very narrative based, even if we're watching it for like the human drama enacted in front of us, you know, on that most basic direct level, the first thing that enters our minds and enters through our eyes and ears, and the first reaction we have is going to be that bodily one. You know, we see people, we see the facial close up, we see an explosion, we see even someone talking to another character. And all those things, we respond to it on a kind of a visceral level, even before, you know. And I think the reason why people love action movies and horror movies is it's that experience in its purest, most heightened form. So people can dismiss action movies, horror movies, certain music videos for questionable moral content. But the moral content should never really be the overriding metric by which we assess the value of a movie or anything like that.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Yo.
Talk about Sense 8, which is a new Netflix original series. I'm here with Caroline and Caroline Criado Perez to talk more about this.
We should really, we've got two Carolines, you know, just I'm your normal Caroline. Guest Caroline is now going to tell us why she really liked this series.
There were a couple of things that I really liked about it. I mean, I'm a real sucker, actually, for any kind of weird sci-fi stuff. I really like the idea of sort of moving between worlds and I guess people with superpowers. People who can do stuff really, really well, basically. That's why I like watching things like gymnastics. Just anyone who can do anything really well. And basically, that's what it's about. It's about all these people who develop these kind of superpowers, but only because they become this... sort of group of people that can all draw on everyone else's talents.
Few know what it means to be reborn a sensate.
A what?
You saw her. But that's just the beginning.
I can feel you. But you're not really here, are you?
You are no longer just you.
It was just really great to see a program not only that was so diverse, the most diverse program ever seen, but one that just didn't make a point out of it. Just are there. They just are diverse. They just are black and gay and, you know, from all around the world. But it's never made part of the storyline, and I really, really liked that. And the final thing that I really liked was a particular character called Sun, who is a South Korean businesswoman come kick-ass martial arts person. And she just sort of crops up more and more and more, being more and more amazing at fighting and sort of embodying these other people and then beating up the bad guys for them. And I just am a massive sucker as well for fight sequences, especially awesome fight sequences, especially awesome female fight sequences.
So I've just watched an episode where she... So one of the other characters is... I've forgotten his name. The guy who drives the Van Damme bus.
Oh, yeah.
In Kenya, I think it is.
Yeah.
And he's got himself into a bit of trouble with these sort of, like, hijacker people. And she just appears and just floors them all for him. And that was a really great sequence. The music in that particularly was also really good. But I think I felt slightly less strongly about the new... It had interesting parallels with Heroes, this idea of, like, a network of people all over the world discovering their sort of talents. But not in a good way, because I didn't really like Heroes. And there was a slight kind of sci-fi cheesiness to it that I haven't quite got over. I don't know. But I do really share your love of just how interestingly different all these people are, without it being a kind of United Colours of Benetton type making a point of that.
I thought the trans woman actually was really interesting, because I genuinely didn't realise that she was a trans woman. And I think that's just sort of indicative of... It's the same with this guy who... I mean, actually, the guy who's a gay actor in Mexico, because that does become a salient part of the storyline, that is a bit more about the fact that he's gay. But again, it's just totally not... The fact that he's gay is just totally not remarked upon, and it's just this totally... Well, of course he's gay, why wouldn't he be?
Yeah.
And I do really like that. The one thing I don't like, and there is this episode 9, which basically there is no point watching, because nothing happens that develops the plot, and there are no awesome fight sequences that I can remember. it's called something like We Are Human, or Are We Human? And it's basically just this mawkish, awful, over-emotive, cheesy to the point of you just want to kill yourself. Exposition of, well, we're all the same really, aren't we? They spend an hour going through this with all these people just delivering these really self-indulgent, solipsistic monologues about, like, the time that their dog died or whatever. And it's just really, really dreadful.
Now, Anna, am I right in saying you did not like Sense8?
I wasn't won over by it immediately. I mean, I remember... It's funny that you compare it to Heroes, because I remember watching the first episode of Heroes and they had a similar kind of challenge, which was there was a lot of characters with seemingly unconnected plots that they had to sort of introduce quite quickly. But I do feel like Heroes, I mean, this could be a negative thing or a positive thing, it sort of was very much like, this is the person.
It was very expositional,
wasn't it? She's a cheerleader, she's blonde, and she can heal herself. You know, it was very, very kind of like quick, and you kind of got on board with the character straight away. Sense8's opening is mind-bogglingly confusing, I think. So it starts off with this very strange scene in an abandoned church with a woman who's sort of contorting and sweating and obviously in a lot of pain, and there are people there, but are they really there? Or they keep sort of kind of disappearing in shots, and then she, this isn't a spoiler, it's literally the first scene in the whole series, she like shoots herself in the head as some kind of sacrificial, this will be better, the world will be better this way, I must do this sort of way. And you're just left there like, what? What? And obviously that's intentional. And for some people that's like, oh wow, I'm gripped now. I have no idea what the fuck's going on. For me, I was just a bit like, oh really? Now I have to concentrate. So that threw me off, I think, at the beginning. There were a couple of characters that I really did connect with straight away. So yeah, Nomi was one, that the trans woman, she's just quite charismatic, and they spend more time with her, I think, essentially in the first episodes. And the short-haired blonde DJ who sort of had a weird vision and doesn't know what's going on, those two characters I felt from the beginning I sort of wanted to know more. It might also be that the blonde DJ is from London, so I was felt...
Well, she's Icelandic but she lives and works in London. Actually, I got very excited when there's a shot of her walking through the tunnel and the Waterloo and
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Line.
Yeah.
I got really excited. You know, when like, you see your tower on TV, I love that. But we should say a little bit about actually the kind of origins of the show. It's written and directed by the Wachowskis of The Matrix fame, and more recently Cloud Atlas. And I feel like this is, it's neither a good nor bad example of their output. It's just really typical for them, I felt like. I don't think either of you have seen Cloud Atlas.
No.
Have either of you read the book?
I've read the book, yeah, but ages ago.
But the book has that, has a lot of parallels actually with Sense8, in the sense that it's lots of characters seemingly unconnected with their narratives kind of overlaid over each other, and they tried to get that across in the film by having the same group of actors playing all of the roles with lots of use of makeup and costumes and prosthetics and stuff like that. If you haven't seen the film, you might have seen hilarious screen grabs of Hugh Grant in the kind of post-apocalyptic future dressed as like a kind of cannibal chief or something, when at the same time he's also playing like a handsome man from the past and other
shots of this of the same film.
I'm getting from this that you didn't like Cloud Atlas.
I loved it.
Oh, did
I
you?
Loved
oh, okay.
it so much. It's kind of grandiose and ridiculous and sort of hyperbolic, but that's why I like it, because I feel like if you're going to try and do something as complex as getting across like multiple overlaid interconnected narratives on one movie screen at the same time, you kind of have to go for it. And that's what they did. And so I feel a little bit like I want to give Sense8 the benefit of the doubt on that score, that, as you say, trying to introduce lots of different characters seemingly unconnected and then establish some sort of supernatural connection between them is a hard thing to do.
I think it means, yeah, inevitably every week some characters are going to have a bad week and some characters are going to have a week that's much more nuanced.
Yeah, but I guess it's not.
But
really...
I think that by, I mean, I think you've only watched 3 episodes and you've watched 4 episodes and I have watched all the episodes. And definitely it starts to come together. You know, it is a slow burn to start off with, as they are introducing the characters and they're spending much more time with certain characters in the opening episodes than the other ones, as they sort of get to know them. And I couldn't tell you at what episode I sort of felt like I knew what the hell was going on and I knew who all the characters were and what their superpowers were. But certainly it wasn't by the first third or fourth episode. What I think is actually quite clever in a way is that you as the viewer are mirroring their sort of what the fuckness, because they don't know what's going on either. And it sort of feels like the story only comes together and the characters only come together and the audience only really gets to sort of see how this is all interconnecting once the characters within the series have also got to that point. So maybe I'm giving them too much credit, but I'm sort of assuming that was a thing that they did on purpose, that were meant to be having the same experience as the characters are of slowly getting to grips with how this is going to work as a cluster and how these superpowers are going to be useful in what context. The other thing that I quite like that sort of develops a little bit is this sort of inter-cluster romance stuff that happens. Actually, there's one bit that's not that romantic. There's this point where they all have this massive, giant, across-cluster orgy, which is just...
I did wonder about that, actually. I haven't got to that bit yet, but sort of seeing the way that at other times they can sort of drop in and out of each other's scenarios. Yeah. It's like, I can see an application for this.
Well, it's really weird because there's one guy is part of the massive orgy who is just working out in the gym and, like, the Mexican guy is giving him a blowjob or something. It's just completely bizarre. Like, so some of them are actually having sex and some of them are just sort of
doing
chilling
other stuff
and get involved in this cluster orgy, which, you know, could be quite distracting, I guess. You know, if you're in an office, that could be awkward.
Yeah. But you mentioned there that you've watched all of it.
Yes.
And I think I'm right in saying you watched all of it in quite a short amount of time.
Yes.
Really burned through it.
I did, yeah.
What was it about it that made you want to do that?
I think it was probably partly everyone in it is really hot, and I like that. And the fact that it's, you know, it's a thriller as well. You know, there is this sense of chase about it. And so you do, you know, want to know what's going to happen, what's happening next. You're always left sort of wanting to find out the next fight that will have to happen, the next obstacle that have to be overcome. I know I keep banging on about episode 9, but it is just such a weird episode because every other episode is so focused on moving the plot forward relentlessly. And then suddenly you just have this episode where everyone just sits around talking and reflecting on their deep, meaningful emotions. After that episode, I thought, okay, I'm just going to give it a chance to redeem itself. And thankfully, it just continued as before.
There has been a real trend in TV in the last 2 or 3 years for what they call like the bottle episode. I know they use this in Girls quite a bit, and also Masters of Sex, which I believe we're going to talk about in a future podcast, where when you've got a kind of a narrative plot driven show, you take like one episode out and you put a small number of your characters in a kind of in a bottle, in a kind of contained situation. And it's almost at its best, it can be like a stage play, you know, it's like you're just watching these two people in a spotlight interacting without any of the distraction of the rest of the show. And then the next episode, it resumes that can be a really effective technique. But so potentially that's what they tried to do here, and it's failed.
Just dreadful. It's really, really awful.
And that's interesting, actually, because it is a Netflix original and an internet native show. You feel like when something is on the internet, you don't have to sop to what the network wants or what the advertisers want.
That's really interesting, though. I wonder if it's precisely because it's a Netflix series and they want to project this image of themselves as like TV and as good as TV and quite as important possibly, yeah. as TV and to be taken as seriously as a TV series. And, you know, they haven't done that many. I mean, they have done some Netflix originals, but it's still its infancy. So perhaps that's why they're trying to out-TV TV. But I just think it's a massive mistake.
Well, thank you very much, Caroline and Caroline.
I realized quickly when I knew I should that the world was made up of this brotherhood of man. For whatever that means. Into a crisis of times when I'm lying in bed just to get it all out what's in my head. And I am feeling a little peculiar. And so I wake in the morning and I step outside and I take a deep breath and I get real high and I scream from the top of my lungs, what's going on?
If you heard last week, you might remember that I assigned Caroline the task of reading the teen magazine website rookiemag.com. Caroline, what did you think of it?
I really, really liked it. I thought it was really so interesting and so well written, a lot of it. And I also really liked the aesthetic. You mentioned the photo shoots when you introduced it to me last week, but I hadn't quite grasped quite how visual a lot of it is. But there was also quite a lot of sadness to my reaction to it that I wasn't really expecting, because I just wish it had existed when I was the right age for it.
Yeah.
So I read some of their articles and just thought, I would have liked myself so much more if I could have read this when I was 14, or felt like I could talk to my friends about this because Rookie said I could. And that made me really sad.
Yeah, I really feel that, especially you saying, you know, I would have liked myself more. There's so much emphasis at Rookie about, you know, it being okay to feel certain ways, and there's sort of a lot of quite intellectual, like, oh, it can be a good thing to be lonely. It can be a good thing to, you know, not necessarily feel that you conform to certain things. Or it can be a good thing to really enjoy, like, you know, wearing, you know, the classic popular outfit or whatever.
To participate
in that kind of teen culture. Whether you do that as an outsider or an insider, either way, it's fine and it's great fun. And it's also, I think you mentioning the aesthetic there, it's got a really amazingly strong brand, I think, and tone that just is in every piece. You, even though they're all individuals and each writer has their own, you know, voice, there's this great sense of tone and place. And I think Tavi Gevinson, who's, as we mentioned last week, the editor, she sort of line edited almost every single piece when they started for about a year to really, really, you know, it's a real deliberate choice to have established that tone. And I think it just, it makes the website for me.
Yeah, it really does. And I really liked, and actually that makes total sense, you saying about her line editing, because several of the pieces I read were from sort of 2011-12. And they had, I think, I'm generally pro the kind of personal essay format, but I do think if not strongly edited, they can get a bit kind of meandering sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I didn't find that with a single one of those ones. They were really, really tight and had a really, really strong sense of progression. I'm thinking particularly of the one, I can't remember the writer's name, but she's writing about how she came to be okay with her eyebrows.
Gabby Noon, I love her.
And that's such a kind of a tightly structured piece that just makes her point all the more. You can appreciate it all the better for it, really. And that's definitely one that I would have liked to have read when I was 15. ditto, the one, there was one about masturbation as well that was really, really interesting and talked a lot about how the writer had talked to a lot of different women and had highlighted that everyone she spoke to described themselves as either an early bloomer or a late bloomer. There was kind of self-judgment in even the language they use. I was very late to it. Oh, I was very early to it. Not just, yeah, I started doing it and it was okay.
Exactly, yeah.
There's no tone of acceptance, even in when we talk about it ourselves. And that would have helped me so much.
I think so. And like, that's one of those things that I think, to think that there could have been this nice peer, you know, voice of my age telling me that these things are fine. That would have been really, really cool.
Yeah, I can remember specifically something that happened when I was in year 9, so 14, I think, when we'd been assigned, and I really cannot remember, I've actually tried to find this novel since to see if it is as bad as I remember it, but we were assigned this novel to read by our English teacher that had in it a kind of a really not explicit at all, but a scene where the kind of young female main character has a kind of disastrous first sex experience, which features the immortal line, "Oh no, I've gone down." Which every girl in my class was completely traumatised, because of course we'd all read ahead and we were all petrified that our teacher was going to make us read this aloud in class and possibly even discuss it. And we were all sort of rigid with fright about this. And that was really, that was my first introduction to literature about sex and potentially having to talk about it completely terrified us. And I just think we would not have reacted like that if we'd operated in a culture where things like Rookie had been widely read.
Yeah, so you mentioned two pieces there. Are there any others that you thought were really...
Oh, there was a great coming out story that I really enjoyed. Again, I can't remember the writer's
name. Is that Arabelle Sicardi? Yes, she's fantastic.
And again, that was something that whilst, obviously, I did read other teen magazines of a more kind of traditional brand, they never had anything, no kind of queer narratives or anything like that in them.
Yeah.
So again, that would have been a total revelation.
I remember when Rookie was first starting out as well, because it was started by a small group of these kind of like 17 to 25 maybe max journalists, and there was a lot of these, you know, photo shoots and stuff like that, and I remember a long comment thread, because comments and that sense of community is really, really important to Rookie, and you know, people call themselves rookies, and there was a long comment thread about, you know, like, oh, I really love this shoot, but you know, I'm wondering why you never have any models of colour in any of your editorials. And there was a real thoughtful response from all the team members, and a real renewed effort to, you know, they committed to making it more inclusive. I mean, that's just one small example. I think the site in general is amazingly inclusive. But I think that's one of the things I love about it so much, is that it is a space for everyone, and they always have, you know, like, not just in terms of like, oh, they have trans writers, they have black writers, they have gay writers, but the overarching tone of almost every piece is, you do you, that's great, and we're all going to sit and learn from you doing you, and I'll tell you a bit about me doing me. And I know that can sound really cheesy, the way I phrased it especially then sounds awfully cheesy, but it's, when you're 14, it's just one of the most liberating things you could have.
Absolutely.
I think
when you're in a place where you think that everything you do is wrong, that you are doing life wrong, having something like that telling you no, it's not only is it not wrong, but also it's fine to feel like that. Let's explore why you feel like that, you know, which is just not something you ever get from magazines that I remember. I used to read Ms. and like 17 and Blush and things like that, and it just never felt like that. You always felt either sort of bemused or petrified by the stories you found in there, I felt.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think it's an amazing sort of comfort, and I do think it's influenced other publications. That kind of strain of ID and Days, I can really see like a direct influence from Rookie there. Now Rookie is so established, it has people like Zadie Smith writing for Rookie now, and I think to have been introduced to artists, writers and subjects like that through a teen magazine would have been amazing for me as a young person, to be like, oh, look at this cool writer who has concerns that you share, would have been really, really interesting.
Yeah, so in summation, I really, really liked Rookie, but I felt kind of angry with time and myself.
Past media
for not being Rookie earlier, I think, is how I felt. But yes, so that was me reading Rookie for the first time, and highly recommending that you do the same.
That's rookiemag.com.
So for next week, I'm going to give Anna a couple of episodes of one of my current favourite TV series to watch, which is the American Showtime series Masters of Sex, which is a kind of historical drama, I suppose. It's been described previously as like Mad Men, but with more sex in it.
That sounds good to me.
So it's set in the early 60s, I think it starts, or the late 50s, and it's based on a biography of William Masters and Virginia Johnson, who were pioneering sex researchers in America at that time, who kind of followed up on the Kinsey report and were the first people to do sort of actual kind of biological and observational study of how people have sex and in process broke down all kinds of barriers and taboos about the female orgasm and penis size and all kinds of stuff, and particularly encouraged women to think of sex as something that they could enjoy. And so they've made it's a really interesting book, and then which I enjoyed, and then I saw that they made a TV series of it a couple of years ago, and I was like, what? It's got Michael Sheen in it, being American. I'm here for that.
Oh, I love Michael Sheen.
So that's what Anna's going to watch for next week, and we will hear her thoughts then.
Don't care what they say. Don't give a fuck what they think of us. So start a band or a magazine. And get that like desk ready, cause we're coming for the jobs. And gonna get the money every day.
We were delighted that so many of you listened to the first couple of episodes of Seriously. We've had some emails, comments, tweets from some of you. We had an email from Neil, and he said, hey, really loved the first episode, but I wanted to chip in with regards to what Kate Mossman was saying with regards to gender. Alarm bells start ringing for me at this point when Neil says, what about this aspect of gender? But it was actually a great email. And basically what Neil mentioned was that when it comes to female artists like Amy Winehouse, the sort of troubled aspect of drug abuse and struggling in the limelight becomes a very, very negative thing. So he says, for male artists, a tragic death, either by suicide or drug or alcohol abuse, is romanticised in such a way that the gory details are incorporated positively into the mythology of the artist. With female artists, this isn't the same. Amy Winehouse is a mess, and it becomes difficult for the public to reconcile her art with her downward spiral. Which I think is a pretty insightful comment.
Yeah. I've not seen the Amy film yet, but I do intend to, and it does just feel so kind of heightened. Yeah. The way it's been reviewed everywhere. But so on the other thing we talked about last week, which was E.L. James Gray, which if you happen to follow me on Twitter, you might know that I have in fact now finished reading, because it was so hot last week that the only thing that could get me to sleep in the middle of the night was reading more of that book. But anyway, we asked listeners whether they knew of any other examples where an author had written two books from different characters' perspective covering the same time frame in a plot, because we couldn't think of any others. And we've had a few suggestions. User Not Not Cal on Audio Boom left us a comment to point out that the Enders series of novels, which I looked it up, I've not read them, but they're five sci-fi novels by Orson Scott Card that were first published in the 1980s. Apparently in that series, the title Ender's Game and Ender's Shadow tell the same story from different points of view. And then my friend Jen also pointed out that perhaps a more famous example that we should have known about in the context of 50 Shades of Grey is that Stephanie Meyer, who wrote the Twilight novels that obviously 50 Shades of Grey originally started as fan fiction of, she wrote 12 chapters of a book called Midnight Sun, which was retelling the first Twilight book from Edward's point of view. The original is from Bella's point of view, so that's pretty much the analogue of it being from Anastasia's point of view and then from Christian Grey's point of view.
Yeah, I remembered when this happened because the chapters leaked online, didn't they? And it was it was everywhere. I can't believe we forgot about it.
I know. This was back in 2008, and it leaked, her sort of work in progress leaked, and she said that all the kind of speculation reaction had kind of ruined the process for her. She even, I think, I found a quote from her online saying that if she'd carried on writing it at that time, James, who's like the evil vampire in the book, would have won and all the Cullens would have died. So she didn't carry on writing it.
Good for her, that's so honest.
And instead she just put the 12 chapters she'd done up on her website so you can read what she'd done so far, and then she's just left it. We'd love to make this a regular feature, by the way. So if you do have thoughts on anything that we've talked about, or if you've got something you think we should talk about, tweet or email us. All the details about how to contact us are on newstatesman.com/SRSLY.
Thanks for listening to Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman. I'm Anna.
And I'm Caroline. You can find us on iTunes.
Our Twitter is @SeriouslyPod.
And if you want to send us an email, we're seriouslypod, SRSLYpod@gmail.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.